and yes, smile. You know this old world is a grateful after all. Smile, Danya, smile. And right away, watch Lady Luck pay you a call.
Well, I hope you have reasons to smile today. I do. I had a great vacation last week, and I'm happy to be back with you. Thanks to my producers and to Jean Purcell for filling in for me. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Monday, August the 8th, and we will talk about smiling this hour. Why we smile and the meaning behind smiles, the biology of the act of smiling. And we're going to welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest who has studied all of this at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let me welcome in our guest. Marianne LaFrance is a professor of psychology and women's, gender, and sexuality studies at Yale University. And she is the author of the book, Lip Service, Smiles in Life, Death, Trust, Lies, Work, Memory, Sex, and Politics. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks a lot for being with us.
My pleasure.
Why did you study the smile?
Smiling is a facial expression, and as a social psychologist, I'm, along with many other people, very interested in the effects of facial expressions. So why do we smile? Why do we frown? Why do we grimace? Why do we show expressions of disgust or contempt or fear or whatever? The smile, however, increasingly became interesting because it was the one expression that everybody seemed to take for granted. It's a very simple expression. Most people think you don't need to be a rocket scientist to know what a smile means, but increasingly our research showed that, in fact, you may not need to be a rocket scientist, but you need to pay attention because there are many kinds of smiles, and they mean many different things in many different situations.
Yeah, in the intro you write, it's such a small muscle movement, but it has substantial consequences. Like what?
Well, smiling affects many relationships. So let's just take the sort of simple everyday. You pass someone you know in a hallway or at a shopping mall or something, and you recognize each other, but you do not want to engage in a long conversation, so you do flash a very quick smile, and they flash a smile back at you, and everything is as it should be. So it's small, it's apparently inconsequential, but it keeps the social activity going smoothly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Smiles can sometimes diffuse tension. So you're with somebody and the tension is rising, there's a little kind of frostiness in the air, but one person smiles, and it sometimes is enough to take it down a notch and diffuse, and everybody feels better. A smile sent across, if you will, a crowded room might either indicate, hi, or it could indicate, are we in this together? So a colleague or coworker shows you a smile and you reciprocate it, which says, we're in this together, or at least we share the view that these other people are being silly or stupid or something. So it has a lot of meaning in social relationships that are way beyond it reflecting something like, somebody's pleased or happy or amused or something.
Right, because some smiles are not necessarily indicating that we're happy. Sometimes we're indicating we're embarrassed or something else.
Absolutely. In fact, the smile is the all-purpose mask. So if you're anxious, if you're embarrassed, if you're disappointed, if you're furious, all of these emotions often have consequences that we'd rather not engage in. So we smile. And sometimes it works. That is, no one who's paying attention, even mildly, doesn't catch, in fact, our emotional drift in another direction. But even If it doesn't work as a full mask, there are these really complicated expressions that can emerge. So the face is this wonderful display, and it can show several emotions simultaneously. So you may catch an expression that looks like a smile, but at closer look, it looks, in fact, like an angry smile or a sad smile or a fearful smile or a contemptuous smile.
Mm-hmm. And there is that, I don't know if I want to say evil, but the sinister smile from the bad guy.
Right. Well, there's two kinds of ways to think of the sinister smile. Clearly, one of the ways that movies have given us a sense is that the bad guy always snarls. So mm-hmm. there's a real smirk to the smile. But one of the things that's so interesting about smiling is what the perceiver brings to it. So there are some wonderful photographs, if you can call it wonderful, say of Osama bin Laden or other mass murderers who, you know, it looks like a very nice smile. And if it wasn't on a mass murderer, you would think, well, what a nice old gentleman. But in fact, we know, so we bring a history. So we've had prior experience, if you will, looking at that. So a wonderful example for me was when people saw the mugshots of Representative Tom DeLay just as he was indicted, or even more recently with John Edwards when he was indicted. So their mugshots showed them smiling, but now we know that they have engaged in acts of malfeasance while in government. And so we look at that smile and think, oh, you rot. How could I have ever believed in you?
Yeah, and speaking of mugshots, some people can really put on what looks to be a genuine smile in a photograph, and others, and I include myself in this, have a hard time forcing a smile.
Well, yes, exactly. I mean, there are con artists amongst us, and one of the chief bits of the strategy is to seduce people with charming and gorgeous smiles. Psychologists have long known, for example, that psychopaths tend to be very charming people. We tend to think of them as, until we are brought up shortly that the view is wrong, we tend to think of them as charming. And there's also a personality that psychologists have studied called the Machiavellian personality. And it's basically the Machiavellian is a person who, given, half a chance, will take advantage of other people's gullibility. And they often do it by adopting a smile that is really apparently credible. We think, oh, what a nice fellow. But other people, they can't smile for the life of them, either because it just feels awkward, or they're embarrassed about the smile for reasons good or not so good. Perhaps they have bad teeth, teeth that have been knocked out, so they don't smile. But the problem is, if they don't smile, other people will tend to think of them as perhaps a little rude or surly or something, mm-hmm. and will, in fact, give them some distance, which is not what we humans want from most people.
Yeah, it's hard having the name Joy and not be smiling all the time.
That's wonderful, exactly. I wonder if you do smile more because people expect you to.
I think I do. I think as a teenager, I remember, as a young girl, smile, 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 and, that kind of saying, your name's Joy, you should be smiling, and I think I do. I think I would learn to put a smile on my face a lot, but it still is hard with, a camera clicking to put on that, that forced or posed smile.
Well, that's in part because the so-called real or genuine smile is actually fairly quick. Now, that's not to say that there's once and, if you miss it, then it's gone forever, because if we're really genuinely smiling, we smile and then it sort of recedes and it reemerges mm-hmm. and then it recedes. Because, in fact, the smile that you're describing, the one that is pasted on, is, in fact, hard to hold for any length of time. And in fact, I had dinner with some friends last night who are in the business of making people feel happy at a golf club, at a tennis club, and they say at the end of the season their faces are just tired from smiling.
Yeah. Speaking of learning how to smile, do we learn how to smile, or is this something that's instinctive?
Both, like most things. Mm-hmm. It is clear that as a species, we come to the world ready to smile. So even babies that are seriously compromised smile when they're born. Babies born blind and deaf smile. People in all cultures, there's not been one that has not found that smiling is there at the beginning. But that's just the beginning, because what then happens is a lot of socialization that gives us a sense not only how to smile. There are, in fact, significant cultural differences in literally subtle variations in what the smile looks like. But the more important dimension is actually we learn when to smile, at whom, when not to, under what circumstances, how much, how little. And so there's a lot of learning that goes on that makes us part of a mature social being and that other people take to be just a normal person. But if that learning doesn't take place for any number of complicated reasons, then people will look and say, there's something not quite right there. There's something not altogether credible.
And as babies and are smiling, that's there in a way, so our mothers will love us. What is that why we smile?
Exactly. I mean, one of the interesting things about babies and smiling is that researchers now know that babies, even in the womb, late stage, will smile. So babies come prepared. The smiles are a little gummy and not exactly full-fledged yet, but the research and theory suggests strongly that a smile is the great seductive tool that babies have with primary caregivers, because there's nothing that grabs most people than a baby smiling. So though mothers or dads may look at the baby smiling and think, oh, our baby's so happy, our baby's just such a happy baby, happiness is not part of the equation when babies are young. Happiness is something that comes later. What is there at the beginning is a smile, and the smile is a way to make a caregiver get altogether attached and to swear life allegiance to that gorgeous smile. So the smile, and then the trade in smiles between the baby and the mom establishes the first social conversations that babies learn. And it's in those conversations that babies get a sense that smiles are reciprocated. Smiles are associated often with good things, because if their smile is returned, then often it comes with other things like tummy smooches or something great to eat or being played with or something like that.
We are talking about smiling, why we smile, the meaning of our smiles, the biology of the act of smiling. And we welcome your questions for our guest and maybe your thoughts or examples of smiling. 1-800-642-1234. Does smiling cheer you up? Does seeing someone else smile cheer you up? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Marianne LaFrance. She is the author of Lip Service. And I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Smile, though your heart is aching. Smile, even though it's breaking.
We are talking about smiling, and we are welcoming your thoughts and questions for our guest, who is a professor of psychology, Marianne LaFrance, and the author of the book Lip Service, Smiles in Life, Death, Trust, Lies, Work, Memory, Sex, and Politics. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 23 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Monday, August the 8th. You are invited to stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, join us for special election night coverage here on the Ideas Network. Wisconsin Public Radio State Government reporter Sean Johnson and Wisconsin Public Television reporter Adam Schrager will talk with analysts and reporters from around the state about the results of tomorrow's recall elections. That's special election night coverage tomorrow night beginning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. to your phone calls now about smiling. And our first caller is Philip in La Crosse. Hello, Philip.
Hi. This is a question for Dr. LaFrance about smiling in the classroom. I'm a teacher of high school science, and I learned long ago from respected elders that you never smile the first month of teaching. You know, it makes the kids think you're soft. Well, I've been at it for 15 years, and I took the advice at first, but I really enjoy what I do. I love the kids. I love being in the classroom. And I smile the first day, and I smile the last day, and I smile at everything in between. But in my own research and my own understanding of psychology, when you first meet a student or a person, your smile should mean something that is like you're submissive to them. At least that's what I learned in primate research with primates. So I'm curious, does the smile, initiating a smile with somebody you don't know, does that indicate submissiveness, or does it have a lot more depth to it?
Great, great question. In fact, the question speaks to research that has now gone on practically since Darwin, who was one of the first to suggest that the smile in humans bears uncanny resemblance physically to the smile of our primate neighbors, which there are has been associated, at least early on in the research, with an appeasement gesture, with a deferential gesture. So let me see if I can respond in a couple different ways. Your issue of smiling and teaching, I certainly have heard and, in fact, talk a little bit in the book about the notion that good teachers should never smile. What I've heard is before December. You said, you know, not certainly in the first week. And the assumption there has been that a smile means and only means a sign of submissiveness or low power, low status, and it ought to be avoided at all costs because students will walk all over you if you look in any way soft. But in fact, it is not the case that a smile only means and only rarely actually means submissiveness. But more, I think your description of your experience as a teacher is that people who truly love what they do, are committed to what they do, know that a good part of an activity like teaching involves having a really close connection with students. And closeness is made a lot easier if a smile is part of the equation because it says, I like you, I trust you, I'm assuming the very best in this relationship. And if you assume those things, then life is going to be a lot more pleasant for them and for you and, in fact, more productive. The issue of the appeasement issue is a complicated one because there are some times in which a smile indicates, look, you don't have to worry about me. I'm really nothing. I'm just, you know, completely worthless. You are all powerful. I am absolutely not at all powerful. So sometimes it has that meaning, but it can be detected as a aspect of that by the actual display of the smile itself because sometimes in the appeasement smile, the mouth may be smiling, but the upper part of the face can show fear or intimidation or anxiety. But even more than that, what's intriguing is we've looked at our primate neighbors even more closely. We find that there are some species that show the so-called appeasement smile when they're greeting another monkey. So it's like, hi, how are you? How are the kids? Good, fine. Where some other very competitive, very hierarchical species, the smile only means appeasement. So even among various and sundry monkeys, bonobos, orangutans, and so on, the smile doesn't mean appeasement.
Thank you, Philip, for the call. Does the act of smiling have a biological effect on us, change our brain in any way? I was thinking of the song I played coming into this segment on, you know, smile even though your heart is breaking, then things will get better. The you know, the lyrics go on. Does it?
Again, like most things that psychologists study, it's not a simple answer, but I think it's a really intriguing answer. So first, it is evident by research that smiles travel in both directions. So in other words, we feel happy and a smile bursts out on our face, but it is also true that adopting a smile can sometimes modify the internal feelings. So there is some truth, some I stress, some truth to the idea that if you smile, you'll feel better. The qualification is that if you're really feeling really terrible, if you're sad, if you are grieving, if you are furious, then a smile is not enough to turn the world around. But if you're feeling relatively neutral or mildly pleasant, then a smile often actually has a feedback function, as it's called. So if you're smiling and feeling a little happy, you'll probably feel happier. If you're feeling rather, if you smile, you'll probably actually feel more upbeat than if you hadn't smiled. So it does travel in both directions, but it is not the case that if we just got the world with all of its various feelings to smile, the world, everybody would be as pleased as could be. That's not so simple.
So the whole world doesn't smile with us if we smile?
Well, again, that's a wonderful phrase, Joy, because what seems to be part of the action, if you will, is that let's say that I'm smiling because I'm just don't want anybody to know how bad I feel. But so you see me and you say, "Hi, how are you? You're looking great." And I respond to your thinking that I'm feeling good. And if you're thinking I'm feeling good, then I might, in fact, actually start to feel good because I think that you care that I feel good. So I smile back, and then you smile back, and we're feeling really comfortable being in each other's company and think, you know, the world really is a good place because I have a friend like Joy. So if I adopt a smile, I will sometimes elicit the behavior from others that then, in fact, makes me feel better.
We're talking about smiling and why we smile and the meanings of our smiles with Marianne LaFrance. She is the author of Lip Service. And we have an open line for you at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Daniel in Rice Lake is with us next. Hello, Daniel.
Hello. There's another form of smile, Da Vinci's enigmatic smile of the Mona Lisa, or on the face of the French philosopher Voltaire, the smile can also say, "I understand." What do you think the enigmatic Da Vinci's Mona Lisa smile is saying?
It's a great question. In fact, researchers have actually decoded that smile. Why I think we call it enigmatic, and it certainly is that, although people have suggested that the reason why it's enigmatic is Da Vinci didn't know how to actually paint a smile, but besides those theories, the interesting thing about the face is that our faces are capable of showing several things simultaneously. One of the explanations for why the smile is so enigmatic in the Mona Lisa is that there is actually a slight mouth smile. So if you pay very close attention to the outward corners of the mouth, there is some, it's not big, there is some upward movement of the outer corners, which causes some raising of the cheeks. But there are other things going on in her face at the same time. In fact, researchers have suggested that in that face, in that particular face, it is a combination of maybe a majority smile, but also there's a little fear in the eyes. There's a little suggestion in around the nose nostrils that maybe there might be some disgust. There's some suggestion that there might be some condescension also in that face. So enigmatic is sometimes the word we give to there's lots going on and I don't know what was really going on.
Our next caller is Jeannie in Stratford. Hello, Jeannie.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yes, I'm just curious as to whether when a person smiles, if there's any endorphin release. And if so, does that change if the smile isn't genuine?
Great question again. At the moment, the suggestion is not endorphins are associated with smiling, but there is another hormone called oxytocin. And there is some suggestion, although at the moment we're at a pretty early stage in that research, that suggests that a rush of oxytocin, most often associated with love and caring relationships, for example, when moms are breastfeeding their babies, there is more oxytocin in them than when they're not. But the oxytocin is associated with more smiling. Whether right now we can tell the difference between a genuinely felt, positively connected smile and a fake or false or put on one by the amount of oxytocin circulating in the stream, we don't yet know. But the question certainly is an important one, because we're beginning to see that this expression that we think is kind of just there is in fact part of who we are, our biology, our sociology, our psychology, and all of these dimensions, whether it's hormones or our social lives or our past history, are all complicatedly related in the way and how much we smile.
Thank you very much, Jeannie, for the call. Barb in Superior called, and she was wondering whether the meaning of smiles varies from one culture to another, and if so, what are some of those differences?
Yes, the bottom line is cultures differ substantially in both what the smile looks like, but perhaps more importantly is when it's appropriate to smile. So the classic example is a lot of Europeans, specifically, say, the French or Germans or Brits or whatever, think the Americans smile just too much. they can't believe that that Americans are smiling all the time, because it just doesn't seem real. In part because within, say, France, the assumption is that smiling is reserved for people you know, for people that you trust and have an established relationship with. And the idea that you would smile to a stranger seems absolutely promiscuous. I mean, why would you ever, you know, do that? Whereas Americans look at, say, how people in the Far East, say, Japan, smile and think it is completely inscrutable. These people are smiling all the time, and you can never trust them because their smiles are inscrutable, and it's impossible to tell whether it's fake or felt, true. So one of the things that really differentiates one culture from another is at whom, under what circumstances, how much. So sometimes smiling cross cultures will get you in the door, and sometimes the door will be slammed in your face if you smile like that. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of the really subtleties of the social rules.
Well, I know even in the United States, some people will say, boy, people in the Midwest are so friendly or odd, they'll smile at strangers.
Absolutely. I mean, people in Wisconsin are sort of the prototypic, you know, good-hearted, friendly, mm-hmm. sociable people, and you can tell it because they're smiling all the time. Whereas in the Northeast, where I'm currently located, people here say, look at the Wisconsin people and say, you know, what's so funny? Or people from the southern part of the U.S. Will look at people from Wisconsin or people from Connecticut and say, so dour, so sour. You know, why can't you just be pleasant and put on a smile? So even regionally within various countries, there is a sense of what's appropriate, what feels right. And so that if we travel across state or across borders into different countries, we sometimes encounter something that seems just, well, either rude or dopey or interesting, but because we know what we know, we think that what other people do with their faces is altogether strange.
So if I smile at someone at the diner here, it might seem normal, but if I smile at someone at the diner in your neck of the woods, I might be flirting with somebody.
Yes, or it might be seen as, oh no, this person wants something.
Oh, yeah.
This person has something else in mind than what I have in mind. So that's precisely it, is that smiling is so much a part of who we are as a gender, as a person from a particular culture or social class or ethnicity, that we think what we're doing is natural. This is the way people do things. And so that when we encounter someone else from another culture who smiles less or more than we do, we think that they are being difficult or being untrustworthy because they're doing something different. Now, in our own culture, if in Wisconsin, if I walked into a diner in Milwaukee and I smiled, people go, hi, and don't think anything of it. But if I don't, it would be probably a legitimate interpretation that something's not quite right. You know, maybe I'm in fact from out of town, or maybe in fact it's been a bad day. So at home, those interpretations probably are on fairly firm footing, but away from home, they may not be.
Do men and women smile differently?
It is absolutely true that they do. In fact, one of the wonderful things about socialization is that if people look at a videotape of a brand new baby, a baby that they don't know, and they're either misled about the baby's true gender, so the baby is a girl, but they're told it's a boy, or they're simply not told. If the baby smiles, they more likely think it's a girl. And if the baby is scowling or fretting, they're more likely to think it's a boy. So this begins the process when girls are expected to smile more, and real boys by the age of 4 should not be smiling, let alone they shouldn't be crying, let alone they shouldn't be showing any emotion very much, because big boys don't get emotional. And if they're not emotional, then they shouldn't be showing anything. So in general, it's safe to say that women and girls smile significantly more than do boys and men. But that is not an absolute. So clearly there are men who comfortable smiling, there are women who don't smile very much. Also true, if you put men in many occupations that are typically done by women, where smiling is part of the occupation, like being a nice person, teachers, nurses, personal assistants, cruise directors, whatever, if you put men in those jobs, they will smile more than they would if they were not in those jobs.
Interesting. Let me take Robin in Mount Zion next. Hello, Robin.
Yeah, hi. Some years ago, I adopted a little girl from Ukraine, from a Ukrainian orphanage. And she smiled right away when I met her, but it was several months before we realized that her smile had more to do with acceptance. It had nothing to do with happiness. In fact, she absolutely did not know how to react when she was happy. She would go into a corner and cry because she understood that emotion far more than connecting laughter or smiling with happiness. And it kind of reminded me of that movie with Robin Williams, that Peter Pan movie where the little boy pushed his smile up and said, "There you are, Peter." You know, I had to do that with my daughter and say, "No, this is, you don't cry when you're happy. You know, this is what we do." And over time, of course, she's learned how to be happy, and she's the most giggly, charming, happy little girl in the world now at the age of 17. But back then, it was a very sad thing for us to realize that a child didn't know how to be happy, you know.
Right, right. Yeah, your story is, in fact, has many others who would share that with you. One of the things that your story describes, and it's absolutely true, is that we have to learn to feel happy. This, people somehow or other think that, you know, we pop out of the womb and go, "Hello, world, I'm happy, happy." But in fact, kids learn how to be happy or how not to be happy. In fact, in the book, we have a wonderful picture of kids, wonderful, I use that word advisedly, picture of kids in a orphanage in Russia, none of whom are smiling. They're well taken care of physically. They are being fed, and they have a roof over their heads. But they are not happy children. They have not been held and laughed with and talked with and bounced, and they have not had the milk of human kindness, if you will. And so first thing that your story clearly testifies to, and there's evidence for this, is that babies have to learn how to have various emotions, or more specifically, they get information from people around them that this is a reason to be happy, or, oh, this is terrible, no wonder you're sad. So they learn that. But the other thing you're describing is that when kids don't have love, they don't learn to smile. And when they don't learn to smile, then they often don't get love. So they're, in your case, your daughter clearly did. But what happens in relationships is that smiles are part of the greasing of the wheels, if you will. You smile, she's maybe more likely to smile the next time. There's a little smile, and you reinforce it. She begins to associate the smiling with love and trust and connection, and that things are stable, and now I have something to depend upon. So it's a wonderful description that you give, and it is testimonies to, in fact, how complicated a smile can be and why it's not something that just is, quote, natural. And it's there, and it will always be there.
Robin, thank you very much for the call. And we are happy that your daughter is smiling and giggling now. We are talking about smiling and why we smile and the meaning behind our smiles, the biology of the act of smiling, with the author of Lip Service, Marianne LaFrance. 1-800-642-1234. If you have a question about smiling, 1-800-642-1234, or the meaning of smiles. You can also email us, talk@WPR.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
All you need is smiles. Lots and lots of smiley smiles. Your sweet pink mouth goes north, not south, and just smile.
Well, we are talking about smiles with Marianne LaFrance, author of Lip Service. Marianne LaFrance is also professor of psychology and women's, gender, and sexuality studies at Yale University. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Kathleen Dunn will be with you, and Kathleen will be talking with her guest about all things political, talking about the latest political news from around the nation and around the state. All things political with Kathleen Dunn and Mike Goucher, her guest today. Speaking of all things political, let's talk a little bit about smiling in politics. Marianne LaFrance, you have a chapter in the book about smiling and politics. How important is smiling when it comes to the political world?
It's very important, and it's very subtle. That is, now that we're in the visual age, clearly in the visual age, a lot of exposure to our politicians is via television, is via the internet, specifically around pictures of our politicians. And most of us currently would probably be surprised to know that a century ago, the most credible politicians were those who didn't smile. That is, we expected our politicians to be really quite serious because the political order was a very, very serious, awesome activity that needed to be taken with all due attention. But now, if politicians don't smile, we think, because there's some suggestion that we want our politicians to be people that are kind of like us, that we could have a beer with or, just sit and chat with. So we expect a friendliness to be part of the dimension. But on the other hand, too much smiling, and we think, this person is not to be trusted. They've got something up their sleeves that I'm not sure what it is, but I don't believe the word that they're saying. So on the one hand, most public displays by politicians show them smiling, but it can veer sometimes into the maniacal. So there's been a suggestion that some political candidates, when they do smile, the smile snaps on their face, as though it's just literally been snapped on, whereas the so-called genuine smile tends to come on the face in a much more leisurely fashion. So it's important for politicians to seem like one of us. Smiling is also associated with charisma. So some of the greatest leaders of all time have been described as having million-dollar smiles, say someone like Nelson Mandela. There was also the suggestion in England that when Tony Blair was prime minister, he had a beautiful smile, and people just thought he was adorable. But when George Brown then ran for that particular position, newspapers often described his smile as being just incredibly awkward, and some attribute the fact that he lost the election because he never could master the art of smiling in a credible way.
Yeah, and I don't mean to sound get too political here, but President George W. Bush was often accused, at least by people on the other side of the political aisle, as having a smirk on his face.
Well, he actually did have a smirk. What we researchers mean by a smirk is a smile that is asymmetrical. That is, it is stronger on one side of the face than the other side of the face. So in very literal terms, it would mean if you look at the mouth corners, that one side of the mouth is raised a little bit more than the other side of the mouth. And that's a classic George W. facial expression. And it is, in fact, a smirk in the sense that it does suggest a smile that is a deliberate smile. That is, he's doing it with some level of consciousness, albeit fairly small once it becomes a part of a habit. And a smirk often goes with either a kind of, well, sort of prep school superiority. It is often associated with our kind of disreputable male heroes, so Bruce Willis, for example, or Clint Eastwood. The sort of make my day kind of smile is actually a smirk, which says, I actually am a little more superior than you are, and I wouldn't suggest you should challenge me on this because it doesn't bode well for you. So what my smile does in that circumstance is it's a bit of a challenge, and it's not a sign of, hey, aren't we good buddies here?
All right, back to the phones, and Jim and Racine, thanks for waiting. Jim, you're on the air.
Hello, Joy. Thanks for taking me on your call.
Yes, thanks for calling.
I had occasion to drive a lot of county and town roads in my job. Most of the time I was driving a pickup truck or a company truck, and I'd wave a finger to a fellow truck driver coming the other way, and he'd wave a finger back, the index finger, incidentally. When I'd smile at somebody that was just had plain face on, most of them would smile back, occasionally not, but most of the time.
Well, the smile is probably the facial expression that is most returned or most reciprocated. In fact, in some parts of the world, I would imagine seeing Wisconsin would be one of those. If you smile, you will almost automatically get a return smile. What is interesting about the reciprocal smile, however, is that it really depends where in the world that happens. So there are some studies done, say, for example, comparing reciprocated smiles in the U.S. compared to in Israel. And although researchers initially thought the reciprocal smile was a kind of hardwired thing, it would be impossible nearly not to smile at somebody who smiled at you, even if it was an absolute stranger, it is now clear that in some parts of the world, reciprocated smiles are very rare. The assumption being that if you are feeling comfortable with strangers, then a reciprocal smile seems altogether normal. But if your world is one filled with danger and possible worse, then smiling at a stranger may not be the wisest thing to do. It might be better to start off distrusting and learn to trust rather than start out trusting and then be disabused of that idea. So reciprocal smiling is really interesting, but your example is also fun because in studies done of who reciprocates whose smile, most of the data show that women are most likely to reciprocate another woman's smile, whereas men are least likely to reciprocate another man's smile.
Hmm.
And again, there we show that it's a smile is not a smile is not a smile. And why would men not reciprocate another man's smile? Well, it might indicate some other relationship issue going on that one doesn't want to engage in. So it's we need to know, and that's why there's so much research on this topic, that who is engaging in this kind of tit-for-tat kind of smiling and who avoids it, because to do so would indicate one's interest, perhaps, that one does not want to convey.
Thanks, Jim, for the call. Alec in Madison is with us now. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I'm really happy that you brought this topic today, because I'm particularly from South America. I've been living in this country for 5 years now, and since I came to this country, what I have found is that people don't really smile a lot here. On the other hand, in my country where I'm from the coast in Colombia, we are always smiling. We are always enjoying life. We are always happy, and we enjoy life with small things. Doesn't have to be money or anything like the material things. Like I have seen more here. When I came here, I moved to Miami first. People over there are really rude. They're very like they don't say much. They don't say hi. And so when I moved here to Madison, Wisconsin, I found that people here are more friendly and more, but I think that's directly connected with how happy you are, how you enjoy life.
Alec, thank you so much. So I guess we're friendlier in Madison, Wisconsin, but we still don't smile as much as Alec noticed in Columbia.
Right, that's a wonderful example. Again, testimony to the fact that in some parts of the world, smiling is something that is just a regular part of life, whereas in other parts of the world, it is decidedly kept at home behind often closed doors. The interesting issue, and this is what we don't know yet very much, the interesting issue is when a smile indicates happiness. Now, it is true that in most parts of the world, if people see a smiling face, the automatic assumption is that the person is happy. But as we've now seen through a lot of research studies, a smile can mean anything but happiness. That's not to suggest that people in Colombia this is a big grand cover, for clearly it's not. There are actual data studies of the cultural differences or national differences in happiness. And in terms of happiness, the United States is way down in terms of the issues of what people describe as making them happy. One interesting study showed, for example, that if you look at what makes Americans most happy, that is, have them describe the things that make them happy, they are often describing situations that have an achievement aspect of it. They've beat someone, they've won something, they've succeeded at their goal of becoming whatever it is that they want to become. Whereas in many other parts of the world, and in fact the southern hemisphere is more characteristic of this, of which Colombia clearly is, smiling is often, or being happy is associated with being around people that you love and like, just want to be around.
We're going to have to leave it there. This has been really interesting. Thank you so very much for being with us.
You're very welcome.
Marianne LaFrance. She is a professor of psychology and author of Lip Service. Thanks to Rob Farid and to Chris Molina and to Bill Martins for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.